I'm Jen Taylor Skinner, and this is The Electorate. On this episode, I have a conversation with Dr. Venice Haynes, the Senior Director of Research and Community Engagement at United States of Care, an organization focused on building a better healthcare system by expanding access to quality, affordable healthcare. Dr. Haynes joins me to discuss Black maternal healthcare and to talk about a report the organization recently published that looks at promising state-level programs and organizations that have been successful in improving maternal health outcomes for Black women. We discuss why these programs have been successful and what we can learn from these state-level practices to improve outcomes nationwide. So, please enjoy my conversation with Dr. Venice Haynes. Dr. Venice Haynes, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be with you for this conversation.
Our healthcare landscape for women right now in this country is rather bleak, and I'm sorry to start off that way, but you know, particularly when you think about reproductive healthcare and our maternal healthcare, particularly the maternal outcomes in healthcare. For context, America is one of the most dangerous places in the world, in the developed world, to give birth. In terms of maternal mortality rates, we have one of the lower mortality rates in the developed world. That's when mothers die during childbirth or because of pregnancy-related causes. And just looking at the U.S. alone, speaking of the maternal mortality rate, Black women have the worst outcomes, I believe. I think it's three times more than white women. All that said, all that bleak stuff out of the way, I was pleased to read the report from the United States of Care, which highlights some bright spots in our maternal health care system, you know, by looking at some promising programs from around the country. And I want to go into those programs in detail with you in a moment. But first, I'm just curious as to why you thought it was important to highlight those positive programs.
Yeah. Before I get into that, I kind of just want to orient some of your listeners to who US of Care is. We are a fairly new organization. We're in our sixth year. And we really like to say that we operate at the intersection of people, politics, and policy, which really means we value listening to people first, or like we often like to say, listen loudly to people and then build policy and take action second. And we have literally talked to tens of thousands of people across the country about the healthcare system. And in the process of that, that's really how we got to the space of the maternal health crisis that's constantly coming up in conversation, right? And so listening to Black women in particular, yes, the stats that you highlighted were on point. That is absolutely right. We heard a lot of emotions, you know, in our work from the anxiety and their fear of getting the best care because of their identity, the loneliness in the process, not being able to fully recover from the birthing experience mentally, emotionally, and not really having a sense of where to go and the services and the resources they need throughout this process. And so a lot of the people that work in this space that are aware of the statistics and, you know, kind of where Black women are falling in this, the needle hasn't moved, and I think we all know that and acknowledge that, which is why we really wanted to create space as we were listening, not just for where the critical gaps are, but what's the ideal journey and where are there bright spots in this process? Because we feel there's a lot of that happening, but that gets left out of the conversation quite often. And so, I mean, from a personal anecdote, you know, talking about this, like you said, it's bleak. It could be discouraging. And I think about, you know, my sister who had a really interesting experience, you know, so part of how I come to the work is, as a Black woman, but just not having kids myself, I'd be lying if I didn't say that this is not a big consideration on whether or not I should have children or not, right? But this is exactly why it's important to highlight the bright spots in this. So it doesn't feel so burdensome and so heavy. And it kind of interrupts this narrative that it's all doom and gloom. You're going to have a difficult pregnancy and there's no solutions out there when there actually are. So I kind of wanted to give some of that framing, both of who we are as an organization and how we got to this space and why we think this is really important. Part of crafting the bright spots is coming out of some really detailed work we've been doing in terms of crafting a journey map. And it's really capturing the experience from preconception all the way to postpartum and child wellness, where we highlight some of those things that I just mentioned, right? Those critical gaps and failure, those pain points. But what's the ideal journey? Because we want to make sure that we're not solving for just, you know, the floor of better mortality rates. We want to have an overall better experience for women of color and Black women in particular on their pregnancy journey. And that is kind of where the Bright Spots was born out of, just to say, here's where we need to be striving and do more of this. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. There's a lot of great examples of great work that organizations have been doing for quite a while, actually, to address some of the pain points that women are experiencing. So we've been really excited to get in and uncover some of those organizations and programs across the country so that we can start to bridge the gap with what's happening and where we can scale up.
Yeah, and I'm really glad to see reports like this out in the world, because if you just listen to our current news cycle, it's easy to fall into despair around this issue. And you mentioned a personal anecdote. I actually had a friend several years ago, a Black friend. We were celebrating actually her, you know, upcoming, the birth of her second child. And she mentioned that she was afraid, and it just kind of took me aback. I had a kid years ago. He was much older, so I wasn't going through that myself, but I hadn't really thought about that. You know, it's a time for celebration. But then there are fears that childbirth, again, can be dangerous for many of us, right? And particularly for Black women. So again, it's, you know, it should be a time for celebration. In your report, though, and I was glad to see that the report came out, but you referred to something called community-based organizations, or CBOs, right? And those are community-based prenatal or perinatal healthcare workers. And so if I'm a pregnant person, and I want to seek the help of one of these CBOs, what role would they have in my pregnancy compared to a traditional healthcare center?
Yes, I love that question so much, because community-based organizations, I don't think get the praise and honor and respect that they deserve for all that they do. Think about when we talk about how the system is set up. And I think it's not lost on anybody that it's just a whole mess. And people just generally can't get what they need across the board. And so in the pregnancy experience, it's almost like it's so saturated, it's so overrun, everyone's burnout. People often feel like they're like a cog in a wheel, like a cafeteria assembly line. They get you in, they get you out. Community-based organizations can fill those gaps. What questions do you have? What services do you need? And it's not always a one size fits all. So the beauty about community-based organizations is they are structured to understand first and then meet the needs of their specific communities, and understanding what women are needing in that particular area. Is it a gap in childbirthing classes? Is there a gap in lactation support? Is there a gap in some of what we call the social drivers or social determinants and structural determinants that need to be met? And they can come in and meet those needs more readily than some of the systemic structures that are out there can do. And so that's why I say I don't think they get the praise and honor that they deserve, because that's a lot of work. And there's so many resources, both monetarily, personnel-wise, and the like, that go into being able to meet those needs. And they're really on the front lines, filling in the gaps and meeting women where they are with what they need. But sometimes it can only go so far, you know, and depending on where they are and what they're offering, they often need support so that they can continue to sustain those services that they're providing to those communities.
You know, it's funny that you mention a cog in a wheel, because you hear people complain about going to the doctor, not just pregnancy related visit, but just for any visit, right? And people complain that, oh, my doctor rushed my visit. They don't really have time to really take the time to listen to me and listen to my needs. And that doesn't really change because you're pregnant, right? A lot of the healthcare systems and workers are kind of overworked and kind of squeezed. So that doesn't really change just because you're seeing a doctor for pregnancy. So reading your report, I see that a lot of them have achieved better outcomes, right, than traditional healthcare. How have they achieved that?
It's because they're right there and they take the time to listen and understand first, right? And so I always like to double down and reiterate that community-based work is not a one-size-fits-all approach because every community needs different things. They have different things at their disposal and similarly don't, depending on where you are. And so community-based organizations are sensitive to that. They see that and they adapt and create programs and services accordingly. Some are able to track where they are with women coming in the door. I'm putting on my evaluation hat really quickly to say, like, okay, in 2019, we were here. And in 2023, we've been able to improve, you know, lactation support. We've been able to decrease the number of women that have been experiencing postpartum depression. Pick the metric, pick the indicator, because they're right there and can understand and adapt and create the services that women need. And it's really just taking the time, right? Again, when you go into more like hospital systems or doctor's offices, and this is by no means any, you know, knock on providers. I think in some instances, they're doing the best they can. And women just need more. They need to feel seen. They need to feel heard, especially first-time moms. I can't tell you the number of times that we've heard women, you know, having to go to Google or Facebook groups to get just their simple basic questions answered, or where do you go if you have this concern, or, you know, this, that, and the other. And so community-based organizations paying attention to those things, understanding where women are starting, can be able to craft programs to be able to say, well, let's understand this and figure out how we can close those gaps more readily.
So there's an organization that you mentioned in the report that I really like. It's called, and tell me if I'm pronouncing this correctly, Mama Toto, Mama yes. Toto Village, right?
Yes, Mama Toto Village in D.C.
Yeah, it's a CBO out of D.C., and they receive funding to do things like home visits and breastfeeding consultant services, right? And that's one of the issues, that a lot of these CBOs don't have a lot of funding to do the services that they want. When you think about hospital settings, I mean, these hospitals have budgets of millions, if not billions of dollars, right? So the fact that they've been able to achieve what they've achieved with the funding that they have is impressive. But can you tell me a little bit more about this organization and about how organizations like this deal with funding?
Yeah, I think they have been serving, 300 clients since 2012. And it varies. And I'll just be frank here. There is a strain on resources, to your exact point, right? Hospitals and hospital systems have hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, there's grant funding out there. There's a lot of different funding sources. And depending on the sector that you're in, there's not always the equal distribution of these resources. And, you know, Mama Toto Village has been phenomenal in understanding what the needs are in those communities and refining those and using that to say, hey, we've been able to make an impact. We have had zero cases of maternal mortality since we've been in operation, and they can turn that into dollars. But everybody is not able to do that to the same level. And so that's actually one of the trends that we have been seeing in some of the other organizations, right? They kind of have to diversify how they get the funding for their organization based on what's available to them. The funding is, I think, always a struggle, but they find creative ways to get the dollars that they need. That doesn't mean that there is not opportunity to be better at that and to kind of shift some of that power back to these communities so that they can have the dollars to keep doing the good work that they're doing.
Again, you know, hospital settings, they make billions of dollars off of the right. cost of healthcare alone. I think I read somewhere that the average cost of, you know, giving birth is something like $20,000. And that sounds actually kind of low to me.
It's higher than that, depending on the procedures and things that have happened, right?
You know, and I want to ask you about other countries. I don't know how much the organization has spent on looking at how other countries have better outcomes, but services like the ones that you've mentioned, like home care services, home visits, doula services, a lot of countries that have better outcomes than we do here in America have those folded into their national healthcare system, and it's provided on a national level. Is that a goal that we want here in America, where we won't have to do this kind of piecemeal approach and have these good organizations and good people in these organizations just kind of fighting for funding to do better by the pregnant people in this country?
Compared to some of the other countries, I the first thing that comes up is how we have over-medicalized the birthing experience. I think about in the Black community in particular, doulas and midwives were how we brought children into the world from the beginning. And looking at the timeline of that, that has gotten edged out of our culture in some places, right? To where it's become the default to you go to the hospital, have a baby, full stop, and there are no other options. And what we're seeing, not just now, this has been happening over many years, is to try to reintroduce doulas and midwives back into the fold, because it's shown that that improves birth outcomes, right? The problem is getting those covered under the current system. CVS and Walmart are looking for ways to, or actually not looking for ways, they are starting to cover doula services up to about $1,200 a year. Walmart is also expanding their coverage for doula services. Medicaid is reimbursing doulas in some places, trying to explore that. So there's opportunities for Medicaid and employers to bring that back into the fold, because like I said, the coverage part is where it starts to get really murky. But I mean, the stats are out there. That's where the improved outcomes are. So, you know, I think about the context of which all of that has happened. And a really interesting anecdote here is the perceptions around that. I think about when we were talking to some women in rural South Carolina, and they actually told us that there was a stigma in their communities around having a doula or a midwife, because if you had that, you were seen as less than. They wanted the privilege to be able to go to a hospital to give birth. And that was a really interesting, like, wow moment, because of like the infiltration of classism, if you will, and how some of the thinking on that will have to be undone. And that's not just a current thing. That's something that's kind of been passed down over the last few generations. So it's a really interesting nod to history. I think we need to kind of look back at where we started versus where we are. And some of those things that we know worked back then can still work now. How do we integrate that back into the current system? How do we get it covered so that more women can have safe pregnancies that we know doulas and midwives can provide for them? So that is one thing that we do highlight in our Bright Spots report for how more coverage or examples of coverage for those services are starting to take shape.
When I had my first kid, the hospital that my doctor was at, it was pretty nice. And I was like, I am happy I am here, because I do not want to be in my house right now. And I don't fully know what doula services would offer me. And maybe a lot of people don't know that, right? I didn't know it was something that was available. So can you explain to people like me what could have been, you know, improved in my experience if a doula had been involved?
Yeah. So doulas really are, and I will just, the deeper I get into this work, the more I'm just fascinated. Doulas, I like to think of, are like advocates. They are there on behalf of the mother. The questions, the concerns, the changes in your body, answering questions on what's happening. When you're in the delivery room, they are there to advocate for mom, to help her labor naturally as much as possible. When there are things that are, I don't want to say pushed, but sometimes pushed, you know, on the woman, oh, you need to have a C-section. Oh, do you want to have this epidural? Just, they're there to kind of intervene and say, you know, no, we're going to take this route. This is what she needs in this moment. She is there to solely focus on mom and put the towel behind her head and do the breath work and the body positioning and, you know, be hands-on or whatever the mom needs, not just in childbirth. Even there's postpartum doulas, there's loss doulas. They cover the entire spectrum, and they are there to be really hands-on. A midwife is more clinically oriented, and they usually are able to deliver the baby, usually in a setting or a hospital setting or a birthing center. There is more training required for a midwife, and I'm just breaking this down in lay terms. But yeah, the doulas are really there to, they know the process. They understand the woman or the birthing person and what they need in that moment.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Because when you think about the person who may be there to advocate for you, say your partner, right?
Yes.
Neither of you presumably know much about the medical aspects of what's going on and how to answer those questions. Do I need a C-section or not? Or do I need an epidural or not? They may be an advocate for you emotionally, but if they don't have the language and the skills to advocate for you in a medical sense, I can see the need for that.
Yes. Think about how much pain you're in. You're having contractions. You got all this stuff going on. The last thing that you want to be able to have to do is make these major medical decisions, right?
Right. So, I mean, is this something that you can envision being folded into our traditional healthcare system so that more women have access to this? Maybe legislation on a federal level?
Yeah, really good question. Senator Lauren Underwood reintroduced the Momnibus Act last year in 2023 for more coverage options and payment models to be able to speak to coverage and how better maternal care is delivered. And I also want to shout out Black Mamas Matter Alliance, who has a policy agenda that looks for more perinatal workforce development to include doulas and midwives, right? And so, you know, there's work out there, there's policy recommendations and advocacy, you know, out there for the coverage to expand the workforce. Because a lot of what we heard too is they want to have providers or somebody there that looks like them, that can advocate for them, that can understand, you know, what it is they need. Like that cultural congruency component is really, really key. And so, of course, coverage, you've got to expand the workforce, but then you've got to cover these services too. So imagine a world where you've got the education out there, but that's also met with, okay, great, I know these are out there. If I go seek out a doula or a midwife, I can know that I'm covered either through Medicaid or through my employer sponsored insurance or however your care is covered. And so that's a big part of some of the work that's out there to try to get passed. So I think there's different levels, state by state, sector by sector, that we need to understand and understand the landscape. But there's plenty more work to do. You know, for your listeners, in the course of, you know, building out this report and doing this work, there are really four themes that came out. Number one is that CBOs are identifying diverse and creative streams for sustainable programs and services, and there needs to be more of that. They're really starting to center equity as an explicit goal and craft programming and services to achieve that. And so California Birth Equity Collaborative is one that I want to lift up that's doing that work really well, as well as the WIN Network in Detroit, where they have their centering pregnancy model. The third one is CBOs and states are trying to build out cultural responsiveness and better maternal mental health care. That is absolutely critical. And so the Massachusetts Child Psychiatry Access Program for Moms is one of the bright spots that's really leaning in and addressing that. So I just kind of wanted to name those trends that we have been seeing across our bright spots. And we know that, you know, when this report comes out, and even those that we've highlighted and I've highlighted in a short time here, that is by no means an exhaustive list. There's so much good work out there happening. And if I had a call to action or final word, I would say, let us know if you're listening to this or you know of organizations that are out there doing amazing things and need to have more attention. Just let us know. We want to catalog those. We want to give everybody that's doing their flowers, that's doing this great work, because we need more of it and it needs to be. No.
That's really promising. And I'm glad to hear that I myself won't be having any more children. But I look forward to the landscape being better for the people who come after me, my daughter, my nieces, and just all the women and the people out there, the pregnant people, people want to be pregnant, having a better healthcare landscape with all of these services kind of built in so that everyone can get the care that they deserve and they need. And I thank you for your good work. So Dr. Venice Haynes, thank you so much for joining me. And again, thank you so much for your good work here.
Thank you so much for having me. And we appreciate all the work that everybody out there is doing to solve this crisis once and for all.